Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, Captain Brett Bartlett. He's the founder of Exumbra Defense Solutions at exumbradefense.com. 32 years of exemplary law enforcement experience. Did I get that right, Brett? All right, excellent. Also, Scott Steyert. Wow, Scott's got a pretty impressive pedigree. Special Forces, Green Beret, little unit called Delta Force. And now he's with Aero Precision USA, living his dream. And you know what? The nice thing is they give him input. So his baby, the new tier rifles that they're producing at Aero, they've got quite the reputation and pretty sweet. And you have your choice of three different levels. We'll be talking more about the tier options, you know, with Aero Precision coming up here. But thanks, guys, for being on the show. Appreciate it. And Scott's still a trainer too. He trains a lot of law enforcement as well. We've got our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. We love Gauls. Also, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And thanks to them, we're on satellite radio right now. AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor, Scott's company. Gunlearn.com, on Medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Yeah, we're streaming to over 1 million people right now. Also, TwoBells.com, they built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. And FishOrlandoBash.com, this is where Brett starts to get excited because we're talking about bass fishing, Disney. He doesn't get so excited about the Disney. And then the alligator, the Florida alligator. And Scott's from Florida. He's not there now, but he knows all about the Florida alligator. So Zach with FishOrlandoBash.com. If you guys haven't checked out the website or contacted Zach, I'm telling you, next time you go to Orlando in Florida, drop the wife and kids or grandkids off at Disney, hook up with Zach and do that bass fishing charter. And if you're really feeling adventurous, do the alligator hunting, guys. What a unique opportunity. You catch and relocate alligators. I mean, it's just an incredible experience. How many friends of yours are going to be able to tell that story, right? And have pictures to boot, right? And I would say scars, but I don't want people to be scared to do it. Zach's a great guy. He'll take care of you, make sure everything's done nice and safe. So FishOrlandoBash.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian, at TampaFP.com. Also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, wow, what in the world are we going to be talking about? I'll tell the news cycle after a good weekend. You never know. So here we go. Undercover journalist exposes Antifa's teachers that throw Molotov cocktails. You got to be kidding me. Well, let's see if you guys find this compelling or not. Then we got a judge strikes down a Florida ban on concealed carry for adults that are under the age of 21. Brett, I can't wait to hear you on that one. So if you're an adult 18 to 20 and had previously been unable to carry concealed, guess what? The door is open now. Then we got four honored for helping a Kentucky State police trooper who ended up being shot near the Lexington airport during a traffic stop. That's a wild story. These all are, guys. All the stories with video components. Then we got Stockton police release body cam of officers shooting and killing an armed 19-year-old suspect. We got the Dallas mayor calling for a review after the police chief rejects $25 million from ICE. And, you know, they wanted assistance with immigration enforcement. He turned down $25 million. And, now the mayor wants to know why. And then we got Phoenix PD. There's a body cam showing officers fatally shooting a suspect in order to save a woman who was pinned by the dude. He had a machete up against her neck or throat. And then we got a man acting erratic, waving around a replica firearm. He's fatally shot when he's pointing it at officers. And there's something else I could say about that one, but I'm not. All right, here we go. I will later probably. Scott will probably bring it out of me. Let's go to talk to our first main story. RVM News, which is Red Voice Media, undercover journalist exposes Antifa's teachers that throw Molotov cocktails. So guys, this is who your Antifa people are. If anyone is listening to this show and you're taking up for these people, or you have any doubts about why they've been declared, you know, a domestic terrorist organization, or you know people, or you're hanging with people that are supporting them, we're going to arm you with some information because we want you to be among the smartest people in the room when it comes to this kind of stuff. We have an independent journalist, Carolyn Borsenko. She was on Fox News on the Jesse Waters show, Jesse Waters Primetime Friday. And she revealed that that many of the members of Antifa, and of course, I already just mentioned they've already been designated a terrorist organization, that they have day jobs in professional fields like education and the law. It gets better. Now, she's on the, you know, talking to Jesse Waters, of course, and she discusses her recent undercover reporting on Antifa activities in places like San Francisco, Seattle, and Portland. Of course, those are all, you know, blue jurisdictions. President Trump formally designated it as a terrorist organization on September the 17th, and that that role in nationwide unrest and attacks against law enforcement and government property. So what they're doing is pretty significant. During the interview, Waters asked her, you know, she was working undercover, about the group's constant presence at protests outside U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facilities, ICE, and demonstrations in major cities. And he says, hey, do these people work or do they just dance and light fires all night? Because, you know, that's a big question. A lot of these same people show up at the same events over and over again. And like, where are they getting their funding? How in the world do they live, eat, drink, sleep? And she says that she believes a lot of them actually do have jobs. And but we want to get into specifics, like Jesse Waters said. So he goes, I mean, these are teachers. Some of them are lawyers. Some of them are Starbucks baristas, Amazon employees. And she said that she didn't necessarily agree with the notion that they don't work. And she goes on to explain that many Antifa members use their income to fund protest operations through what they call mutual aid. So I have never heard that before. I've always assumed and been. I mean, the educated people think that it's people like Soros that are funding these people, but she says actually part of how they fund all the supplies in those tents is through something called mutual aid, where they take their salaries and they donate them and those supplies. But certainly there are some that are out there 24/7. And Waters started pressing her. She said there are teachers that go and teach elementary school, and then at night they throw Molotov cocktails at a building. And he said, really? She says, oh yeah, 100%. And she said, I was just undercover at a couple of anarchist book fairs over the weekend in San Francisco and Seattle. There were absolutely teachers in the crowd there. She said that she picked up multiple stickers and posters with Molotov cocktails, called it calls to kill ICE and calls to kill the police. And her comments, she went on to say that there follows a series of reports highlighting Antifa's continued activity in the Pacific Northwest. So that's all increased. And I don't know if there's any shock, guys, in finding out this information, but the journalist seemed compelling. And she was on Jesse Waters, and not just some flyby news show. You know, they vet these people. Captain Brett,
let's have some names and addresses. I could have said what she said. Scott could have said that. You could have said that. We all believe it. But let's get some names and addresses. Let's start putting some behinds in jail.
You know, there was we did find out there was one teacher recently that did the little neck thing, mimicking Charlie Kirk's death. And apparently, I've been told that her principal is standing by her, and she's not out of a job yet. So,
wow, that's crazy. And they're a terrorist organization. I mean, that's until they're held accountable. I mean, it's words. I mean, it's the same thing with a lot of all this talk. It's like, okay, so you designated a domestic terrorist organization. What does that mean? Okay, yeah. So hopefully what they're doing is they're going in and they're looking at funding and they're all that other stuff. But, you know, when are we going to see arrests? When is there going to be a difference? I think that's what everybody's waiting on. And who knows? Yeah. Maybe they're collecting information. I know this doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take time. But
they need to have, maybe they haven't even gotten a roof with a precision rifle and somebody raised their hand with a Molotov cocktail. They need to put one right between our run lights and drop it, let them set themselves and their buddies on fire.
Yeah, why doesn't that happen, Brett? Because obviously, there's no doubt about that being a deadly force situation. I mean, people picking up a rock and going to throw a rock at me, I'm not going to put a bullet in them.
If I was on the street and somebody picked up a rock to throw it at me, I would shoot them. Mm-hmm. But these cops, they're letting these people get face to face with them. If we were on the street, we'd have punched them down. Yeah. So I think they just need to fix this. Hey, listen, you can talk all you want, but if you reach within an arm's reach of me, I'm going to punch you. Because when you remove that safety zone, man, they could, and the cop's eyes are right with them. They don't see the knife coming out of the pocket, stabbing it into the cop's side. They don't see that. Mm-hmm. But you go back to pre-World War II Germany, who was fighting the fascist? Okay, so they've labeled us as fascists. Antifa fights fascists. Who was fighting the fascists? It was the communists. The communists fight the fascists. If they've identified as that, that must mean they're a communist. And I don't think anybody would disagree. They're communist.
Good point. Well, guys, we'll keep following it. I hope they hold people accountable, but you're absolutely right. There needs to be accountability for this, and they need to take the leashes off law enforcement. I know that a lot of these guys just don't feel like people have their backs. And maybe it's a training issue too. I don't know. But I would love for it to get, you don't think so, Brett?
It's a political issue. It's a leadership decision.
All right. Well, guys, moving along, we got another good one coming up here. This is an update story. TampaFP.com. Judge strikes down in Florida ban on concealed carry for under 21 adults. Now we got 30 seconds here left. So I'm just going to whet the appetite. But this is in Broward County, and a circuit judge down there on Friday ruled that a state law that prohibits adults that are ages 18 to 20 from carrying concealed weapons, it violates the Second Amendment. More information about that coming up, guys. This is time for our first commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Gauls at Gauls.com. And you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. When you throw the online option, it's almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody about what's really important here. It's supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know if a company does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And listen to this. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. Not only that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And yeah, we're still not done. They're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of the show, they've given me a radio code that I'm going to give to you that you can just type in at your next purchase, get 15% off. It's Radio 15. So next time you go to Gauls.com and make that purchase, type in Radio 15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase. They also have gift cards. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they will be your new best friends. You know, we give away a couple every week on the show. Gauls.com. Check it out. You guys would be glad that you did. All right, now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And hey, we are big fans. You know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they call their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yeah, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip, Brett, and Scott sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Captain Brett Bartlett and Scott Steyer with Arrow Precision. And guys, I think I was just whetting the appetite on our next story when we went to commercial break. And judge strikes down a Florida ban on concealed carry for under 21 adults. This is at TampaFP.com, which is the Tampa Free Press. So this Broward County judge on Friday ruled that a state law that prohibits adults that are they're adults, but they're not 21 yet. They're 18 to 20. And previously they've been unable to carry concealed weapons. And now the judge is saying, hey, that violates the Second Amendment. So the judge is Frank Ledee. He dismissed a felony charge against a 19-year-old named Joel Walks, who was arrested back in March after police spotted a semi-automatic pistol in his waistband. Now, in the 9-page ruling, the judge stated that Florida's ban, it strips a class of legal adults of their ability to exercise the very right the Constitution guarantees. And he concluded that the state failed to identify historical founding era laws broadly prohibiting concealed carry by that specific age group. So it's making sense to me, Brett. The ruling applies specifically to the concealed carry limit, age limit, and it has nothing to do with the more publicized state law currently being challenged by the NRA, which is bars people under the age of 21 from purchasing rifles and other long guns. The decision adds, you know, to a wave of a bunch of challenges that are going on with Florida's gun restrictions. And of course, there's a September appellate ruling that deemed the state's longstanding ban on open carry was unconstitutional. So now we're open carry now too. Scott, you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, I mean, it's, you just can't pick and choose. It's the constitutional right. I mean, you know, you could argue, I mean, I understand where they're coming with that as far as the maturity level, but if you're 18 and you join the army, and you know, I always say that you can go off to war, you're willing to or potentially die for your country in war using a firearm. I think in the case of joining the military, the one thing that you will have is training, and it's one of those things. I absolutely believe they should be allowed to. I wish that, and I know this is controversial, but there should be training involved for any, for everybody. And that's to protect them as well as everybody else. It's like knowing, going through scenarios, understanding when you're supposed to use it, when you're allowed to use it. Anyhow, I know that that's probably not, it's not a popular thing, but I think training is the one thing that'll solve or help with any type of lack of maturity in, you know, carrying a firearm. But yeah, it is the right, and I believe in the 2A. So,
yeah, I agree. I know Brett and I might differ on this point, and I know Brett, I actually kind of have to agree with Brett, because so Brett will tell you, if I'm wrong, Brett, correct me, but Brett will tell you that the right to carry a gun, the necessity for training does not outweigh the right to carry your gun. That is superior, your right to carry a gun. If you're just choose not to get whatever level of training you get or no training, that's up to you, but it still should not interfere with your right to be able to carry a firearm. And that's hard to argue with, although I think the right thing to do for anyone that is carrying a gun, strapping on or whatever, however you're carrying it, or you have, even if you have it in your house, there is a lot of liability that goes along with that. And I would like to think that they would be responsible enough to at least to get somewhat familiar with the, mm-hmm. with the firearm. But
well, here's the thing. Let's say you do take training. Let's say there's a test. What if you miss it by 1 point? What if you're not having a good day? That means you can't carry a gun in self-defense.
No.
Bruin decision, it made all of our arguments moot, made it all moot. And the Bruin decision very basically is this: if it wasn't against the law when the Constitution was ratified, it cannot be against the law now. From a citizen perspective, training is ridiculous. From a trained perspective, please come see me and learn how to do this. I just had a class yesterday of concealed carry people. We were talking about it. I said, it's not the carrying the gun that's going to get somebody in trouble. It's pulling the trigger that's going to get them in trouble.
Yeah,
it's not even the accuracy that's going to get you in trouble. It's the decision to pull the trigger. But here's the thing. If there was training, who's going to mandate it? Who's going to write it? Who's going to be the instructors? How are you going to administer it? It's a nightmare. You know what? I saw this the other day, Scott, and I like this. Somewhere between freedom and chaos is responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we all have the own need for responsibility. Chip, did you know this? I just saw this in Brevard County. They're letting county employees openly carry at work.
Oh, really?
You didn't see that.
No, I did not see that.
That is an earthquake. That is an earthquake here. Yeah. Now, when it comes down to the younger kids carrying a gun, I agree with Scott. Listen, man. So I go over and I fight for my country and I come home and I'm 20 years and I can't carry concealed. Are you insane? Mm-hmm. They should have at least written into the law something for that.
Now, what is this thing going on with under the age of 18 making a purchasing guns and rifles? What is that about?
Separate statute. Let's deal with one statute at a time. Right. That kid got arrested. He got arrested for that one, for violating that law. So that judge took care of that law. So one step at a time. So in Florida, we have permitless carry. We have open carry. We have now between 18 and 21, you can carry it. All the dumb dominoes are falling one at a time. But again, I wish everybody in Florida could come to my class and learn what they need to. But as a citizen, I would say you're not going to demand anything of me.
There should be some, maybe some incentive for everybody who carries a sidearm. There should be some incentive to go to get the training. And what is that? I don't know, but there could be like a campaign to talk about it, you know, to the importance of it. Because right now, no one's even doing, they're not doing anything. It's like, I think you just maybe the educate the public and like, hey, yes, you have a right and you should exercise that right. But understand that now you have a responsibility as well.
Well, a lot of people that I see coming through the classes, I think that's exactly what they're thinking, because I asked them, at the beginning of the class, did you know that you don't have to be here? Do you know that you don't need a permit? And they all agree, yes, we knew that, but we want this.
Good.
So I'm encouraged by them, but that's a very small number of people. Mm-hmm. But again, when I was a homicide captain or major crimes captain on the scene, no homicide detective ever said to a shooter, hey, that's some pretty good shooting. Or they never said, buddy, you need some tightening up on your skills. The only thing the homicide cops want to know is why you pulled the trigger. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't know that. What these sheriffs should do that are advocating people defend themselves, they should direct them to 776-012, which is that statute in Florida.
All right, guys. Time for next commercial break. MVS says when he was in school, they had gun safety classes at school. Interesting. We'll be right back, guys. All right, guys. Introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about Scott's favorite subject, long guns and Brett's. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection because settling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus, Bolt, Actions, and that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and Mod 4 handguards, they hit the market last year at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, and they're now being tailored for the civilian customer, which means that now you guys can start getting your hands on this primo stuff. And their M5 AR-308 spectacular. Don't settle for less when you can have the best. AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're joined by Captain Brett Bartlett and also Special Forces Scott Steyer from Aero Precision. Guys, I know that we've been talking about guns and a new gun ruling. Are you guys ready to roll to some stories with video components? Is that you guys ready for that? All right. So I'll tell you guys, we got some great stuff. From there's a law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, and it's at rumble.com. So if you go to rumble.com, type in This Is Butter, got the great stuff. And he's the first one to get it out. Four honored for helping KSP, which is stands for Kentucky State Police trooper, who was shot near the Lexington airport during a traffic stop.
Say Ross subject.
Yeah.
Just get back. Get back.
Wow.
Just get back. Yeah. 3 or 4. Help, please.
3 or 4, go ahead.
What are you gonna do? Bleeding on the leg.
Tourniquet?
Yes, please.
Look, there's a lot to unpack here, so let's just jump into it. We're in Frankfort, Kentucky, and the Kentucky State Police, they honored four people on Thursday who rushed to help a trooper who ended up being shot during a traffic stop near the Bluegrass Airport back on July the 13th. Now, they released the dash cam and the video cam associated with this. The trooper's name is Jude Remelin and ended up getting wounded. And what was the name of the street that he got wounded at? Terminal Drive. How would you like to get shot and wounded on Terminal Drive? Yeah, I know. Yeah, really. You know, so the video shows Trooper Remelin approaching a pickup truck. It's a traffic stop. And the weird thing is that when he gets out of his car, he opens up his driver's door. I'm talking about the trooper. He's got a radio. I don't know if you guys saw the radio that was clipped in on the inside. Brett saw it. And he closes the door. And I'm thinking to myself, he's leaving his police radio behind. Well, he had another one on him. So I don't know how that works. But anyhow, he approaches the pickup truck, and they even notate that he's got Christian music playing in his cruiser while he's, you know, driving, gets out. And this says the shooter's in the back seat of the vehicle, which you're unaware of. No matter which video you watch, the dash cam, body cam, you're not going to be able to figure that out unless you read it in the article. So he's conversing with the driver, And he's standing right about where we would normally stand. But if there's somebody in the back seat, you know, he's going to be between that, you know, that back seat, you know, front seat area. And all of a sudden shots ring out. The trooper goes down immediately. Now he ends up getting shot in the leg. Then he starts rolling. The truck's stationary, starts rolling and then gets up and they blur him and he starts running forward. Well, there is just a like a field and grass. There's like nowhere for like cover anything, but he's running. He's creating distance. Well, while he's doing that, now all of a sudden the driver who was not the shooter gets out of the truck. And from the dash cam, it looks like somebody gets out of the front passenger door. It could have been the rear. It's kind of hard to tell. And then they switch positions. The driver goes over like by a stop sign, just stands there, and he's trying to let people know or let the officer know that, hey, I'm not a threat. And this dude that was the shooter walks around the truck, the rear of it, and then he gets in the driver's side and he drives away. And so now we go to the body cam, and our trooper gets on the radio that he's been shot, and then he gets approached by these civilians. And oh my gosh, it was just like, it was great. Now our guy is going to talk about the lack of a tourniquet. Somebody had a belt that they had to take off to apply tourniquet to save this guy's life, keep him from bleeding out. He was shot in the leg, like I said earlier. So the trooper's still recovering from his injuries, and the four people, you know, get recognized, for what they did. And we got Jimmy Alexander, Jessica Alexander, Taylor Hall, their daughter. And then the fourth person ended up being an airport police officer, Adam Arnold. That all helped save the trooper's life. And we got Kentucky State Police Commissioner Philip Burnett Jr. weighing in, saying that he thinks there's moments in life where the right people are at the right place at the right time. And he thinks that this is what it was one of those times. Commentary on the shooting, guys, a lot to unpack from a lot of different angles. Scott?
Yeah, there was a lot. And I mean, hey, I this is just like, you know, I wasn't the one there. I wasn't the one that was just being ambushed by this, you know, getting shot, you know. So when I was looking at this, I was thinking, you know, first of all, you know, when you come up, like the way I was trained, hey, always, you're always looking for an out. Like if something happens, like you're thinking, okay, the first thing I need to do is go where there's some cover. If you don't have cover, concealment is the next best thing. But you're getting somewhere to where you can reassess, or you're gonna, you know, start re-engaging at that moment. So however it works out, really, it just depends. So him running in front of the vehicle in an open field, that was kind of like, I would like to think I wouldn't do that. You know, like most of the time you go to the back of the vehicle because then they would have to turn around. It's harder for if somebody was in the vehicle to have to shoot behind them. And then at least then he has his vehicle as well as concealment or cover in some situations. So that was kind of, you know, and it makes me think it's like maybe the officer just wasn't, you know, thinking, or he didn't have the right mindset of like, hey, if I get engaged from someone in the vehicle, what am I going to do?
Man.
I get it. Hey, you do. He probably pulls over. I don't know. He's probably pulled over hundreds of people and then, you know, without incident. And it's hard. You can't be switched on all the time. I mean, that is a fact. But kudos to, and then the fact that he didn't have a tourniquet. I mean, that's another thing is like, I have, you know, as I train officers across the country, I mean, that's something that I noticed when I first started training back in 2016. It was probably 50-50, but still a lot. I mean, a lot of officers had tourniquets on them. And today, I mean, in my mind, from what I can tell, I would say the vast majority of officers have tourniquets on them. And a lot of them, they carry them on their ankle. They have like a little ankle holster for that reason. So if they have to reach down, they can get it with both hands. Some of the, you know, a lot of times it's multiple tourniquets. So the importance of having that med training as a police officer, do the training, have the tourniquet. It's very simple. Doesn't hardly weighs anything. I was told by, I think it was a state trooper, they're not allowed to have anything extra on their kit. So having like a tourniquet, they have to hide it somewhere, which is why the guy that I was talking to, he was a state trooper. He had a little ankle holster and he would put it there because you can't see it. And it's within regulation for his uniform.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, it's crazy. And state troopers, they are very strict compared to other law enforcement as far as their appearance and as physical appearance, the way they dress. They're very professional across the board. That's something that I've noticed, but they're also very regimented in how they're supposed to look in uniform and stuff like that.
All right, Captain. Oh.
One thing I noticed, and I've never seen anybody run in front of the vehicle. I've never seen that ever. So I don't know, but, you know, but he got shot. Mm-hmm. As he's laying on the ground, I heard the dispatcher ask for his location.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, Chip, when you were on the street, but me and my guys and people I trained, here's how we did it. We get behind a car. We'd say radio, we're going to go signal 50. Scott, that means traffic stop. We're going to go signal 50. It's a red Toyota. Here's a Florida tag. And then we're going to be at this location. And once she says 10-4, then you flip on your lights. Apparently, either she didn't have this location, or more likely, he just didn't give it before the stop. And that is so incredibly dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And on the stop, he was asking the driver to show his hands before he walked up on the truck. I don't know what that was about.
Well, that might be very typical. Hey, put your hands on the wheel. That's pretty benign behavior. I don't know. But again, he said it three times. Why say it three times? If you got somebody that's disobeying your commands, why even go up to that vehicle yet? Mm-hmm. To stay right there, get behind cover, reevaluate, give a couple more commands, establish that driver's state of mind or state of resistance, and then come on and go right. I need another backup. Yeah. People not obeying your commands is a gigantic flag, a danger flag. But number one is you got to tell dispatcher before you hit those overheads where you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Yeah. I mean, absolutely no doubt. So there are some takeaways. You're right. So that's good. Location, the dispatcher should have known where he was automatically. I fault the agency if they're not outfitting those guys with tourniquets and training them how to use them. Shame on them, especially in today's day and age. Shame on them. If it's an appearance thing or some other, you know, stupid reason, there's not many things that are more important than saving someone's life. And I'm not even just talking about the cops, who is really I primarily care about, but talking about the civilians as well. What could be more important than that, especially in this day and age? There's just no excuse. And, yeah, so there's so many. Yeah, it's a good learning. It's a good learning tool.
Scott, you brought up a good point about these troopers versus local cops. Local cops have that vest, and they got everything on but the kitchen sink. All and nobody really cares what you're looking like. But I kind of tend. You brought out a good point. Those troopers, they always are sharp, which is good. But you never see a lot of stuff on them. I never thought about that.
No, it's a very professional image. They always have the, you know, a lot of them have the high and tights. It's more of a military look. And the way it was explained to me is because of the history of the state trooper going back. I think it was, and I might get this wrong, but at least in, I think, the state of New Jersey, which might have been the very first state to implement or to have state troopers. It was General Schwarzkopf's, I believe, father. That's what I've heard. And he started it. So he incorporated all that, you know, the look, the standards, which again, I love it, but not at the sake of not having the proper equipment. Like, if, you know, have what you need to protect yourself, to do your job and make it look professional. You can have pouches that look good and you're still able to get to it with either hand and have it accessible.
Good point, gentlemen. Perfect timing, Scott. We're up for our next commercial break with GunLearn.com. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett. Take a bow, Brett, and also attorney Ken Appianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you if you have your own agency. If you're a chief or sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity, and you can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by actually our co-host, Brett Bartlett, captain, and also Scott Steyer, Special Forces with Aero Precision. And guys, we've been talking about, you know, the officer that did a traffic stop by an airport in Kentucky. and he ended up getting shot. You know, they don't say what happened to the bad guy. You know, he got away, but we don't have any intel on that. I may have to research and get some more information, but they no identity. Did they ever catch him? Did he get away? I mean, you know, just all that stuff. None of that is included in it, which kind of, you know, surprised me. So, but if there's anything else, great. If not, guys, we've got another one with a video component that we can move to. So you ready to rock and roll to the next story? Okay. All right. So our next story, guys, it also has a video component. It's also at rumble.com on our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. So we're with Stockton Police. They released body cam of officers shooting and killing an armed 19-year-old suspect.
You have some on you? Okay. You have some on you?
Who the f*** can shoot you? Stop. Stop right now. Who the f*** can shoot you? Do you understand me? You're going to get shot. Back, back, back.
1220,
1220
is running.
So this is in California, so Stockton, California. So the police department, they released this body cam footage. And it's when the officer shoots and kills a suspect that they say was armed. It's on September the 9th. And so officers find a 19-year-old suspect, later identified as Rocco Robinson. He's sitting in a car on the passenger side that's double parked. And they got the door open, and they're talking with him, and he's sitting down. So he attempts to leave the vehicle, ignores their commands, and now all of a sudden there's a struggle. And they do even do like a little freeze frame to where it appears, at least from my observations, that both officers had their duty-issued firearms, you know, pistols out in their hands while they're messing with the bad guy. In fact, one of the officers had it up against the bad guy's back, and the other one was just like maybe a fraction of an inch away in the still, you know, in the still that I saw. So they're, you know, when you're fighting a bad guy with one hand and the other one's got a gun, they're that could be problematic. But leaving that alone for a second, there's a struggle, and he continues to resist their efforts to detain him. And despite multiple commands, he's non-compliant. Now he's pulling away and he's breaking free from the officers. And he drops an illegal extended magazine for the handgun that he's carrying. And he takes off running, and then he drops a loaded firearm. He ends up kicking it forward ahead of him. He runs after it. He bends down, picks it up. This is supported in the video. And then the officers open fire on him, and he later dies. Just looking at my, you know, at my notes and stuff, I think that's pretty much how everything, you know, I didn't really pick up on all this until I watched the video, read the article. I had to go back again to watch and see how everything went down. And it went down just like that. They do have a slow motion and a zoom on both body cams. So it's really a wish list of video. If you want to see what went down and how it went down, it's like they've got every angle that you could imagine. Scott Steyer.
Yeah. I mean, I think overall it was a great job done by the law enforcement officers. You know, again, never being a cop. It's to your point. That's the first thing I thought of, is like you had two cops there. Each of them had their pistol out and they were trying to control the subject with one hand. Where maybe if there was some communication, hey, I'm going to go hands on the other cop. He has cover. Now that cop has both hands on his firearm, which is way more likely to be more accurate and able to get shots on target if he needed it in that moment. So he has cover, and then the other guy could have had, you know, both hands to, you know, to maybe grab him in such a way, throw him down to where he couldn't reach for his firearm. You know, again, that's just, to me, it's like it's kind of splitting frog hairs here, but you know, that's why I'm here for, just to give it kind of more of a tactical look. And you know, I think that, you know, that would have been a good option to have the cover guy and have the one guy who does hands on with both hands. But beyond that, I mean, they were really switched on. They were able to, you know, I think the one guy, the mag drop, he communicated that. He said magazine, so it dropped, so it alerted the other cop. And then they were switched on. They did everything right. And when they saw him grab that firearm, they did not shoot until that moment. Cause as soon as he grabs it, he kind of like made a, you know, like he was going to twist back, and why would you grab a firearm? You know, when there's two cops pointing guns at it. So, I mean, it was a really good shoot. And I think the cops overall were really switched on.
Excellent. Captain Brett.
Oh, Scott, you're right. Contact officer, cover officer, still alive and well. But I don't know. I really don't know why both of them had their guns out so quick. Maybe I missed something.
Yeah, they may have suspected he was armed, but sure. But I'm with you. I never want to fight a guy with a gun in my hand, because you. No. I mean, we know what happens when you're doing one thing with one hand.
Right. And I'll tell you, the fact that they didn't fire a shot during that grab tells me that at least they didn't have the finger on the trigger. Because if they had their finger on the trigger when they're grabbing, and Chip, I don't remember the name of what you just talked about, but when one hand clenches, the other hand clenches, they would have fired a shot. But here's what's kind of neat. I don't know if people notice this, but they had the real good good quality dot scopes on the gun. They had the closed emitters, which was a nice, you know, that's a heavy duty item right there.
Oh yeah. And it's a great advantage. Great advantage having that.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute, but good for them. He fired the shots, fired 12 shots. Good. Good for him, man. Fire the shots. This whole one shot thing, especially that distance, that's not a good thing. So he did pretty good. I just don't know why they both had the guns in the hand at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, thank God we did not have a shot fired, because that's what I was waiting for. I was just waiting. Okay.
I will tell you at that point though, they thought he had a gun. So what if they'd have fired a shot? I was thinking the same thing. Why didn't they shoot him? If they knew he had a gun right there, why didn't they shoot him just right at that moment? But I may have missed something, or maybe I didn't see something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for the people that rely on video for 100% of their information. This is a perfect example on why not to do that, because it's just some things you're really going to miss, you know? So, I know we've got maybe just enough time to cover one more. We got just over 3 minutes. Which one were you talking about? The next video, like video three, Brett, with the,
with the fake gun. That was a pretty good setup.
Okay. Right, the next one would be the woman pinned by the guy with the machete. So you're talking about the replica. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. The replica gun. Yeah. I got a lot of good comments about that, if we can squeeze some in.
All right. So let's go. We got 3 minutes. I'm going to make this quick. Rumble.com. This is Butters, the channel. A man acting erratically, waving around a replica firearm, is fatally shot when he pointed at the officers.
Deadly weapon suspect there now. After additional callers described the suspect as threatening, waving a handgun at passing vehicle.
Let me see your hand.
Hey, drop that.
Was that guy bow-legged or what? I mean, oh my gosh, when I saw that guy and I was looking at his legs, I was like, is he just like, I thought it was like the optics of the camera. But anyhow, we're in LA, California, September the 10th, 2025. 5:18 p.m. LAPD Mission Patrol Division uniform officers respond to a radio call of an assault with a deadly weapon. And the comments of the call, the suspect, 50 years old, Gustavo Ramirez, armed with a glass bottle and a firearm. They get they call the airship. So they get, you know, the eyes in the sky. Suspect was observed, and they see him. Well, they're giving him verbal commands at first, and they're unloading a lot of like less lethal on him. And then the guy runs away. They chase him down, and then he points a handgun at the officers, and there's an officer involved shooting. He ends up being pronounced dead, and it ends up being a black plastic replica handgun. And there is a male officer and a female. Female's on the passenger side. Male officer's driving, I'm pretty sure. And there are while the female yells first, "Hey, let me see your hands," and the male officer saying, "Drop that," and they essentially keep yelling the same commands at the same time, but different commands. Brett Bartlett.
I got two things to say. First, that officer that fired the shot, that was a great shot. He had a dot scope on his gun. I could see it on hers. I assume he had one on his. I just assumed that. What was really impressive was the after party where the supervisor controlled everything very well. You know, he controlled it. He said, "Don't touch your gun. You go here, you go here." I was very impressed with that individual.
The after party.
After party.
That's not like the afterlife party. You're just talking about the after party.
If it's a great after party, it could be a great afterlife.
All right.
Yeah. So and he only took one shot, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So that incredible. I mean, and I think, and because I saw that, I was like, man, that was one shot. I mean, and it dropped him. There wasn't a need for another, because as soon as he took that shot, he fell. And then, you know, I was watching. I think what he did is he was in between the door and the vehicle. And he was, and it looked like maybe his arm was resting. Either way, he had the presence of mind. He wasn't so worked up that he didn't know what he was. I mean, he had the perfect shot. That was a difficult shot, very difficult shot. One shot, killed the guy. Great shot, composure. And then he was also, to your point, I was going to say, yeah, there was that guy who was kind of, hey, you do this, do this, and they were making sure the ambulance was called. And I thought that was pretty solid.
So the main issue, I thought, Brett, you're going to be all over the conflicting commands being given by different officers at the same time, you know, not one control officer, you know, you should only have one guy given a command, but then, hey, let me see. Well, he showed her his hands. All right. She did exactly what she wanted him to do. But the other cop realized that, hey, well, there is a gun and he needs
maybe
to drop.
So, but overall, you know, he took a good shot. He set up, took the shot. I did notice this when he fired the shot, I went to the second video, you saw her hands flinch. Like she was startled by his shot.
Glad she didn't have her finger on the trigger.
Yep. Well, you know, so what? It's a deadly force encounter. She just would have missed.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah, because we're such great shots. Hey, a great show. Captain Brett Bartlett, Scott Starr, thank you guys so much. You guys nailed it out of the park. I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. And hey, guys, a shout out to our sponsors, Gauls, our title sponsor, Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor, Scott's Company, GunLearn.com, Medicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, TwoBells.com, and FishOrlandoBass.com, bass fishing and alligator hunting. Hey, thanks for the support, guys. We'll look for everybody back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.